Okay, everybody, so today's daf is daf Kuf Samach Zayin. We're holding Kuf Samach Zayin Omid Aleph, the third line from the top of the Omid. From the beginning of the Gemara Omer Abaye till the Mishnah down below, the Gemara is going to tell us about certain deceptive practices. Even in the times of Chazal, unfortunately, not everybody lived up to the highest standards of honesty and integrity. Unfortunately. Omer Abaye. Someone who wants to go and show his chasimas yad, that means his John Hancock, his handwriting in Besdin. We'll see in a moment why would someone want to go and show his signature in Besdin. But bottom line is, he wants to do that. So the Besdin asked him to write his name on a piece of paper, a piece of cloth. He shouldn't write it at the bottom of the page. He should rather write it at the top of the page. Why? Because after Bezdin takes a look at his chasima, they may just throw out the piece of Megillah, this piece of paper, in the rubbish bin. Maybe somebody else is going to find it, v'kosiv, and he's going to write on top of it an I-O you note, because of the Masig Bei Zuzi. This person, Reuven Ben Yaakov, who is showing a sample of his signature to the Bezin, if he writes on the bottom, somebody else might find that piece of paper and write at the top, I, Reuven Ben Yaakov, hereby owe Mr. McGillicuddy $1 million, and he has his name on the bottom, and it is signed. And therefore, this is a personal IOU note. This is not the typical shtar choiv that we find throughout Shas, because normally it's Reuven owes Yaakov, Reuven owes Shimon $1 million, signed by two Edom. Over here, this happens to be an IUU signed by his own signature. You could add Edom as well, of course, but you don't need to. It's an effective shtar on its own. It doesn't have the same status as your normal shtar choiv, because a normal shtar choiv has an automatic money-back guarantee, meaning that there's a chrayis on chosim. Here, however, tanan, we're going to learn later in the Masechta. Hoyitziol of ksav yod eishu chayiv loy. It's ksav yod, his own John Hancock, I, Reuven, O, Shimon, money, and Reuven signs on the bottom. Goy min chosim, b'nei choyer. Not b'nei mishubadim, but b'nei choyer. Oh, so therefore, be careful. Don't write your name at the bottom of the document. Write it at the top. Document, not at the bottom of the piece of paper, right on the top of the piece of paper, so this should not be a concern. Now, why would someone want to go and write down his name on a piece of paper and submit it to Bezdin? There could be a number of reasons. However, Rishbam gives the answer based on the Gemara and Ksubis, which we had, by the way, not that long ago here in Masechtas Bava Basra. And that is, what happens if you have two chasimois on the bottom of a regular shtas, like you typically would have, and then somebody challenges the authenticity of those chasimois, so then you have to go and prove, good morning David, we're on Kuf Samach Zayin Omid Aleph, approximately 7-8 lines from the top of the Omid. So the Rishbam explains, let's say you have Reuven and Shimon signing on a document, and one of the two passes away. Rishbam says, Umeis Shimon. Shimon is Nishda. And somebody challenges the veracity of these, or the authenticity of these signatures. So you have to be able to go and prove it. Now, had Reuven and Shimon both been alive, they would go to the Bezin and say, yeah, that's our signature. And we're done. Everybody is Ne'eman on his own signature that he signed this. Reuven believed on his, Shimon believed on his. And we're done. Unfortunately, since Shimon passed away, Reuven can still come in Bezin and say, yo, that's my signature, Bezin. Absolutely. What about Shimon? I recognize Shimon's signature. I was there. I remember when Shimon signed. Sure. However, Reuven is not believed on Shimon's signature on his own. You'd have to bring another individual. Bring Levi, for instance, that would go and say, yo, I recognize Shimon's signature, and so therefore you have now Al-Pishnaim Edom Yochum Dover, two people on Shimon's signature, and Reuven on his own signature. So what's the problem with that? Says Brother Shai, that back in Masechtas Ksuvis, and also here in our Masechtas, I think it was Daphne Zion, the Gemara there said that there's a din of Al-Pishnaim Edom Yochum Dover, each one can go and provide 50% of the edus. However, they cannot provide 75%. And if Reuven were to be made on his own signature, and then he's going to be made on Shimon's signature together with someone else, then he's going to be 75%, the entire 50% of his, and then 50% of Shimon's, which means 25, so 50 plus 25 is 75. That doesn't work. So what can you do? Says, I have an eitzah. What you should do is have Reuven sign his name on a piece of paper and then hand that over to the Bezdin. And the Bezdin on their own will go and look at this signature compared to the other one. And if they see that it looks consistent, they'll say, yeah, it looks great. Because the Bezdin can go me mekayim chasimas based, for instance, on old shtaris. So also now on a new shtar, on a new chasimah, they'll say, yeah, Reuven ben Yaakov, exactly, you could see exactly how he curved it and the script. Yeah, he did a beautiful job. Ah, so once we know that, we don't need Reuven's testimony as to his own signature, because Bezdin will figure it out on their own. So now when it comes to Shimon, I have two Edim, 50-50, so then that works out perfectly. Ah, so now Reuven has to, however, write down his name on that piece of paper and hand it over to the Bezdin so they can make the comparison. Says Abaya, don't write the name at the bottom of the document. Write it at the top of the document. So in fact, the Gemara now tells us a real life story that happened. Who? Bazvina. What's a Bazvina? Rishbam says about halfway down the Omid, Moches v'Yisrael Hoya. He was a tax collector, but it sounds like more a customs or toll collector, as you'll see. In fact, Rishbam uses the term meches, moches, and even in Eretz Yisrael today, when they talk about
duties.
Exactly, duties. Customs, right. If you go through the, from the airport, you have meches. To go the meches, either green or the red, but if you have to pay, you have to pay meches. Exactly. Anyway, Sahu Bezvina, so this was a moches, who, as we'll see, was not an honest individual. He also came to Abaya, and he came in front of Abaya. Omalein, he told him, Nechzili mar chasimois yodei, I want Abaya, you know, I respect you, Abaya, tremendously, and all of the Talmidim of your yeshiva, and I want to give you all an exemption when you come to the airport. I give you an exemption from the mechas, you don't have to go and pay. However, how do I know that a particular individual is one of your Talmidim? I make up the following with you. Every Talmud that comes by should have a letter signed by you, Abaya, saying on it, this is one of my Talmidim, and therefore please exempt him from mechas. No problem. I'll accept it. Now, how will I know that this is really you, Abaya, signing the document? Please, here's a piece of paper. Write down your name very clearly. And then, would you like some? Here's the coffee. DFT. So, if the person, Abaya, if you'll please write on a piece of paper your name, and anybody, any one of your Talmidim that's going to come, and is going to have your signature on the bottom, I'll compare your signature from this piece of paper that you're going to sign now against all of those other pieces of paper in which you ask a request to forgive and to exempt your Talmidim from mechas. So on the surface, sounds like a really nice guy, being very generous and very gracious. But we'll see it's not so simple. Says the Gemara. So this was this Bazvina. He also came to Abaya. Omalei nechzli mar chasimas yodei. Please write down your John Hancock or your Abaya Hancock on a piece of paper, and I'll have it. I'll keep it in my drawer. The chiyos rabban. Anyone that Talmidim is going to come by, machvi li, and they're going to show me their request, their letter identifying them as Talmidim of yours. Then I'm going to go and compare it to your signature on this piece of paper, and guess what? I'll see. Oh, it's Abaya, real modified, and I will give them a varna lehu, and allow them to go and cross the bridge, the border, the ferry, whatever it is, without having to pay. So Abaya said, fine. Now remember, Abaya was the Baal HaMemra that said a moment ago, right on the top of the page. So what did he do? Ach v'leibah resh megilta. He, Abaya, wrote his name on the very top line of the page. While this moiches have a kanogibay, he was pulling down the page, or pulling it up, so that Abaya shouldn't write on the top line, he should write on the second line, the third line, the fifth line. So he kept like, kind of tugging on it and pushing it up, so that the name would be written a few lines further down. Amaleis, Abaya said to the Moiches, Kvar Kadmucha Rabbanan. The rabbis already years ago knew about these deceptive measures and patterns. they knew you don't sign on the bottom line, you sign on the top line, and these types of situations. So that was case number one. Now we have another deceptive practice, Omer Abaye. Mitlas viad eser loylichde besoif shita dilma mezayif ekosav. What happens if a person writes in a document, Reuven owes Shimon tlas, tlas means $3, or viad eser up to $10 l'mashal? Don't write the amount at the very end of the line. Why? Because the person is going to add to zeros. The tlas. In English, it would be zeros. But here in Aramaic, they're going to add the yud nun. And so therefore, if you put tlas, someone will add yud nun, it'll be tlasin. Tlas is 3, tlasin is 30. If you have arba, then it's going to become arboin. Instead of 4, it's going to be 40. Chamish, chamishin, it's going to be 50. And so on until you get to eser. Eser will become esrin, which is 20. You don't have to worry about achad osar, because even if you add achad esrin, you'd still have a problem that between the achad and the osar, you'd have to add a vav. Echad vi esrin, to make it 21. So therefore, since it's going to be kind of claustrophobic for that vav to be squeezed in between the echad and the eser, it's going to look fishy. So be careful if the amount of the loan, the amount of the sale price, whatever it is between 3 and 10, make sure that you don't put it at the end of the line, so they shouldn't conveniently add a yud nun to make it from 3 into 30, etc.
I imagine the lines end all symmetrical the same.
If you happen to be a really very, very good, you'll notice, Mandy, even in Sifrei Torah, the Havdil, very often, if the Sofer is not one of the best Sofrim, sometimes the lines are not exactly even, that you have an extra letter protruding from one line, even though the next line is, most of the lines are pretty,
so justified.
Most of them are justified, but you have a few times where either it's a little bit indented to the right or indented to the left. It depends on
the. You see the mezuzahs a lot.
Exactly.
The mezuzahs more, because mezuzahs are written more commonly.
And
by
you can't go back on mezuzah.
Mm-hmm. Then you can't make any changes. That's correct. Anyway, shkoyach mendi.
So what is the second piece of advice here?
The second piece of advice is that if you're writing a number in Hebrew or in Aramaic letters, such as the Yankel owes Beryl 3, don't put the word 3 at the end of the line, put it in the middle of the line. Because if you put it at the end of the line, it's convenient for someone who wants to engage in a deceptive practice to add yud nun to the word. So instead of 3, tlas, it'll be tlasin, 30.
Well, if it's at the end of the line, then there's no room to add.
Yes, there is. There's always a bit of
a little,
there's
a little
margin.
There's always a margin.
A sliver of...
Right. Exactly. Okay. So Mendy was pointing out, isn't it always kind of, as Barry called it, isn't it always justified, can't you see? And so I was saying that even if you look carefully in Sifrei Torah, especially earlier Sifrei Torah, you'll find if it was not written by the expert Sofer, that top-tiered Sofer, that very often you'll see a little protrusion here and a little protrusion there. Mm-hmm. It's not totally justified. So squeezing in a little yud and then a long nun,
right.
It's not, these are not
right.
Wide
and
letters.
This is handwritten, so it can't be...
Exactly. It's not computer, and therefore you can't push the letters back and forth, and etc., etc. If you think that I'm exaggerating,
no,
over
God
here,
forbid.
God forbid. But you can see the Rishbam over here goes down about two-thirds of the Amud, where the Rishbam begins, Omer Abaye. Do you have that? Mitlas va'ad yud le'lichti b'soif hashit. About 10 lines before the widening of the lines in the Rishbam. Mm-hmm. What is he going to do b'soif hashit? The mezayif, the cost of litlas, instead of 30, I'm sorry, instead of 3, he's going to add the yunun, it's going to become tlasin, 30. Ula arba, he's going to make arba in. Ula chamish, you're going to make chamshin. V'cheinat eser, you can go all the way up to 10. Yichtiv le'eser esrin. Avalchad osar, en yochel is yufay. That's already much more difficult. What are you going to do? You're going to make achad esrin. Achad esrin doesn't mean anything. Echad vi esrin, oh, that's good. Tzorach l'michtiv echad vi esrin. He's going to have to add the vav in between the echad vi esrin. V'chikosav bein achad osar. Vav. Near a dochuk umincha, you'd see that it's kind of squeezed in, so it looks suspicious. Especially you have a yud nun protruding a little bit on this side, and you're putting an vav on that side. So therefore, the major concern is between 3 and 10. But now the question is, what happens if the sofer the best that he could, but unfortunately the word came out at the end of the line? What should he do now? So he looked at himself. She did him mezayif kosev v'yisramile. If it happens b'diavad, nahadre ledibure train tloses in me. He should repeat the fact that this is 3 or 5 or whatever it is two or three more times in the document. Lav dafka two and three. The important thing is efshad le misrami le bi emtashita. If you repeat it again and again in the document, it's bound to be at least one time, if not more, where you're going to go and write it in the middle of the line, and then you don't have to worry about adding the yud and the nun or whatever, because then you'll see that it's squeezed in, just like we said, be'acharosa. You put the vav in the middle between two words, looks squeezed. Same thing is, if you're going to put in the middle of the line, right after that there's another word or another sentence or whatever, if you're going to add the yud nun, it's going to be much more discernible. Therefore, and we learned in the Mishnah, as you recall yesterday, the day before, that when you have a machlokes between the Elyon and the Tachton, you always go after the Tachton, except for the Shita Achrayna. But otherwise, you go after the Tachton. So, therefore, if it says 30, 30, and then it says 3, it's 3, it's not 30, etc. So make the Emtza Shita. Okay, says the Gemara now, another deceptive practice. Rachman Litzla. Hahudi Havakosiv Bey Tiltza Bipardisa. What does that mean? This person owned a gina. Gina means a nice garden. And inside the garden, there was a pardes. Pardes means an orchard, where you grow various types of fruits. Okay, what was he selling? The owner of the gina was selling a third of the pardes of the orchard, which was in the larger garden. So he was selling relatively small portion, a third of the pardes in the gina. The purchaser, however, also machke legage de base u vekare. The base of Bipardisa, if you look at it carefully, you can look upon it as being a vav plus a kepala, a little top on the top, and a little base on the bottom. So it's a vav with two protrusions to the left, right? The top of the base and the bottom of the base. So what did he do? He took an eraser, white out, and he took off the top of the base and the bottom of the base, and now you have a vav. So what is it now? Instead, vishavi upardisa, which means I'm selling you a third of the garden, plus the pardes, which is, of course, much, much larger than they had made up. He was only selling him a third of the pardes within that much larger gina. Now, by changing it to tiltza upardisa, it's one third of the gina plus the pardes. Also, the comedy Abaye. He went and brought the shtar in front of Abaye and he said, hey, the mocher is jipping me. He doesn't want to give me what I'm entitled to. I'm entitled to a third of the garden plus the whole pardes. Amaleis, Abaye says, my timer, ravachle almalahai vav. How come that vav of the upardesa seems to have so much extra space? Because after all, once you take off the top and the bottom, between the vav and the pay of the pardes is now an extra room for another ois, if you will. And therefore, something does not look right. What did he do? Kafsi v'oidi. They tied him up until finally he had to confess. In fact, he did this forgery that there was a vase instead, or vase instead of a vav, and he was white. And now we have something similar. There were two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and Yankov from left field is buying from them a piece of property. And it says in the document that, Yankov, I'm buying the property from Reuven and Shimon brothers. Reuven and Shimon brothers, I'm buying. Each one of them had a chevik in the property. They were partners or whatever. And I'm buying both of their partnership interests and etc. Now, havelhu acha d'shmei achi. Reuven and Shimon had a third brother whose name was Achi. But even today, there are some people that have the name Achi. Achai v'Reyai, exactly, yeah. Anyway.
Achiezer,
exactly. The person was called Achiezer, so they might just call him Achi for short. Very good. So now what happens? Now, Achi was a third partner, and he also had a cheder, but he was not involved in this transaction. He was holding on to his portion. What did this purchaser do? Ozel kosabei vav. He put a vav in front of the word achi. In other words, until now it says, I'm buying these shares that belong to Reuven and Shimon, the brothers. And now it says, I'm buying the shares of Reuven, Shimon, and achi. V'shav yivi achi. It's not nice what he did. Also, the Kamli Abaye comes from Abaye. As you see, Abaye was very attuned and very astute to all of these deceptive practices.
So you're
going to
bound him up?
Oh, yeah, wait a moment. The other Vav had so much extra room. How come this Vav is so clenchic? It's so squeezed in between the Shimon and the word Achi. Kulihai, how come it's so squeezed in? Kafse, he tied him up, and he confessed, that this is a fraudulent practice, and in fact, I only bought it from Reuven and Shimon, the brothers, as opposed to Reuven, Shimon, and Achi. Finally, it was a shtar that was signed with the signatures of Rava and Avacha Bar Adam. Anyway, the person who was faced with this shtar said, this is fraudulent, this is not true, this is a counterfeit shtar. So what do you have to do? You have to now prove the chasimais. So also the Kavad Rav, he brings it in front of Rav, Rav afterwards, one of the people that signed. On Malay, so Rav said, I want you to know, the guy that signed my name did a great job. Dein chasimus yoradidi. I cannot distinguish between this chasima that was done counterfeit and my own. The person did a really fantastic. Miu, however, I know that this is a fraud. Why? Miu kameder of achabar adolei chasimili. May oilem. The other person that signed the documents of Achabar Adar, who was senior to Rava, and Rava said, I would never go and do such a disgraceful thing, something which is so disrespectful. After all, if Achabar Adar was old enough to be my father, my Zayda, or whatever, I would never write my name, sign my name in front of him. He would always sign first, and I would sign second. So this whole thing is a fraud. So Kafsei, so then again they tied him up, the Oidi, and he was Moida, that in fact these are counterfeit signatures.
Did they torture
signature.
Them, or did they
torture them?
Because Ariel would have brought suits against them.
Cruel and unusual punishment, as many states...
Well, it's not unusual, because it's the third time you've had it on the page, so it's not unusual.
It's a chazak.
Exactly.
Now, Kafsi doesn't necessarily mean that they put him in chains. It could very well be that means that they put him in a room, they lock the door.
Taking away someone's freedom unto itself could be...
For sure. Yeah. But guess what happened? He was moided that he confessed that he was engaging in these terrible acts. Okay, so now...
There's a question whether he was under coercion.
You can't
that's
confess
not for
under...
That's a Gerishin issue.
Well, we have Talyar Vizavin Zvine Zvine, so maybe this also is okay. If he hangs him upside down, he sells, it's a good purchase.
Anyway, let's continue on, because Mendy has to leave to the airport for a future Simcha and get to show. As Omalais, he said, Bishlem Adidi Zaifis. Rava said that you were able to go and mimic my signature. You did a great job. Now, I can understand that. You obviously practiced it, and you went slowly. How did you do that? The Rosh Hashanah, unfortunately, being elderly, he didn't write it with stability. Remember, he shook whilst he would sign his name. And so therefore, how did you do such a great job in being able to reenact his signature, which is unfortunately a product of shaking hands? Hey, Chayavdus, what did you do? So he gave him one of two eights. Omar, Anchi Yodoi Ametzra. Either I was holding on for dear life to the lifeline, literally, that goes between one pole and the other pole over a river. In other words, we're talking about something smaller than the George Washington Bridge. To be able to go from one side to the other side, there was just one narrow set of planks, one after the other, so that a person shouldn't, chas v'shalom, fall off to the right or to the left. There was a rope that was strung from one side to the other, so you would go and walk on this narrow path and hold on to the rope. As you can well imagine, he was probably saying Tillim at the same time. But the point is that this is a very shaky type of thing. So when he signed the name, he took that piece of paper, holding onto dear life with one hand and shaking with the other, and that's how he was able to do it. If you look at the Rishbam, 6-7 lines into the wide lines, the middle wide lines, a metzra al chevel hanotui misvas hanor el tzvasi shnia. There was a rope going from one side of the river to the other side. Va'ivrim gesher kotzer. They would go on a very narrow bridge. Gesher tzar ma'od, right? A very famous niggun today. And people would go on that very very narrow bridge. Nishonin boy, they would go and hang on to that. And they would pass through, and it's constantly moving back and forth and shaking every hour, so he would make sure to grab hold of that whilst he was signing the documents, and then it would be a shaky signature. The Amri, the others gave a different etzah. Come Azarnuka Vikosav. What says Azarnuka? And Azarnuka is like a, you know, years ago, people that had problems with their stomachs or whatever, they had those plastic, I don't think, maybe water, rubber, water bottles.
Oh, hot water.
Hot water bottles, put in the stomach, put in the bed, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, those hot water bottles typically were not full to the brim, but rather they had ear spaces or ear pockets on it. So what he would do is he would stand on that type of water bottle, so then it would shake a little bit because it wasn't flat. So you look at the Rishbam, Azarnuka, whatever that French term is, Sheboy Doilin Maim in a bar, they used to use that for drawing water. Come Azarnuka, Ola Ale, he would stand on top of it, V'chosam, and he would sign, V'chol Gufa, in his entire body, No V'no, it was constantly going back and forth because that water bottle he was standing on it, yep. V'yod of Rishbam, and therefore his hands were shaky. Shai, this is an Eitzah, Chas v'Shalom, for anyone that wants to deceive signatures which are shaky hands, tries to do one of those things. He holds on to the shaky bridge, or he stands on one of these water bottles. Okay, on to the next Mishnah. Look at Mishnah, Koisin Getli Ish. We're going to have now a series of shtarais mentioned in our Mishnah, where typically both parties would be present at the time that the soifer is writing the shtar, but it doesn't have to be. As we'll see, it depends on who is commissioning the writing, and is it to his benefit or to the other person's benefit. So, koisin getli ish. What happens if a husband and wife, unfortunately, are now at the brink, and now the husband is writing at a get for his wife? He can go to the sofer on his own, even if his wife is not there. And she may not be happy with the idea of a get, but we don't need her consent. One can go and give a get to a woman, bal karcha. That's minatoyer. If you'd be so kind, Reb Simcha Samoich, please close the door. Thank you. That's minatoyer. By the way, back in the 10th or 11th or 12th century, they made a takana. I think this is one of the takanas of Rebbeinu Gershom. Just like you can't marry multiple wives, you cannot go and give a get today, bal karcha, to an isha. Minatoyer, you can.
What does that mean, bal? You can't.
Bal karcha means against true will.
Right.
So here, you're divorced. That's right. It.
Yeah, you can't do that?
You no longer can, even though it's a Torah
law. She has to accept it.
She has to accept it, right.
Mm-hmm. If she doesn't accept it, she can say, I don't want
money. She can say, I don't want to be divorced.
Anyway, we're going beyond the scope of our Mishnah. The point is, at the times of the Mishnah, one could give a get to a woman even if she didn't want to accept it. So what happens if she refuses to take it? You can go and be Machner, Kinyan Chotzer, and throw into a Chotzer, and the other Eitzis as well. But the point is, since you can go and be Megarish and Isha Bar Korcha, you can have the get written out, and not only written out, we're going to have a few Koisvin in the Mishnah, means even signed by Edim, even without her being present, so that if and when he comes home and he gets furious, he says, Sprinza, here's a document for you. She takes it in her hand, she opens it up, it's a get. And
it's the first Mishnah in Gittin. I mean, it's surprising that it's repeating it here. It's maybe get Medina Sayyam. If you're bringing it from Medina Sayyam, obviously she wasn't there to receive it.
So. Okay, maybe it's just because we're going to have a bunch of other cases which are not in the first Mishnah. So going to get Lisha Mavisha ain't Ishta Imai, even if she's not present, because you can go and give it to Bar Korcha, even if she's not happy about the idea. What happens is, at the time that a woman gets her get, she says, okay, if our marriage is over, I want to get my ksuba. So the husband says, oh, I'm happy to give you the ksuba, but you have to go and then give me a receipt. Okay, so if she's going to go now and go to a bezin, to a soifer and find the receipt, there might not be a soifer around, the soifer is going to be busy writing a sefer Torah, the soifer is on vacation, whatever. She can go and have the receipt written out, even if her husband is not present. And we're going to have this as a continuing theme throughout the Mishnah, that as long as the person who is commissioning the writing, it's not to his or her benefit to have that shtar. In other words, this is a self-inducing wound were she to lose this shoiver and her husband to find it, then she won't be able to get paid because the husband is going to go and say, I have a receipt, paid in full, it's signed and sealed, da-da-da-da. So obviously it's not to her benefit to have such a shtar roaming around there wild, so she's going to have to be very, very careful. So she can write out such a shtar. The husband could not write such a shtar, because if he does, that's a fraud. In other words, he goes to a soifer and says, soifer, please write out that the sprinter received the entire ksuba and have two edim sign on it. Obviously, this would be a fraudulent practice. So
she has to be present when that takes
either she
place.
Has to be present, and then she's going to tell the soifer, oh, no, don't finish it. Edim, don't sign it until the money changes hands, until I get my ksuba. But she can have the document signed and sealed already in her pocketbook, so that if and when Chas Hashem the husband gives her a get, she could say, where's the ksuba? They'll say, I'll give the ksuba, but where is the
receipt?
Where's the receipt? I got the receipt. So she can go right at the receipt in advance. Hashem v'isha v'isha ein bala ima. Now in both cases, the case of the get, in the case of the shoiver, u'bavad shehei makiran, the soiver has to be able to recognize that this is in fact Mr. Smith who's giving the get, and that this is Mrs. Smith who is commissioning the writing of this shoiver, of this receipt, so that she can go and use it if and when he pays her the ksuba. Why is this so important that he has to recognize them? The Gemara will address this in Yad Hashem. Of course,
he hires a woman to come with him, pretend the wife, gives her the ksuba.
Okay, so why don't we wait until we get to the Gemara? What you're saying is very, very good.
Back
then point.
They didn't have ID or
exactly.
Even today, there's no ID.
Exactly.
Vote. Just to vote. Okay.
Okay, well, you need driver's ID. Whatever it is. Continue on. The Habal Noisin Schar. The Baal has to pay the schar. He has to pay the schar both for the get and for the shoiver. Rishbam says for the shoiver it's a dover poshet, it's a schus for him to go and have a receipt, so he doesn't have to pay a second time. So then certainly he has to go and pay the schar. That means he has to pay the soifer's charges for writing out the shoiver, because this will be his proof that he doesn't have to pay a second time. Why does he also have to pay for the get? Says Rishbam, time mafarish for Gemara, stay tuned to tomorrow why he pays for the writing of the get. And we continue right to the Mishnah. Let's leave now Gittin, and now let's talk about Ishtar Halvon. Koisin Ishtar Loiva Avo Bisha Ein Mal V'Imai. You have a similar situation. You have a Loiva that's been bothering the Malva, please lend me money. And the Malva says, you know, come back tomorrow, come back the next day, blah, blah, blah. Finally, the Malva says, okay, I'm ready to go and lend you the money. However, we have to have a Ishtar. I don't want this to go and be just a Milva Alper, because you might deny that I ever gave you the halva. So let's write out a shtar, and this way I'll know for sure. So says the Gemara that the loive, knowing that the malve may try to push him off if he doesn't have a written shtar, he can go in advance to the soifer and say, soifer, please write out a shtar. Adam, please go and sign the shtar. Obviously, the loive has got to be very careful that he doesn't lose that piece of paper, because if he loses it and it gets into the hands of the malve, even though the malve didn't give him a nickel, not even a penny, the Malva say, hey, you see, what a beautiful shtar, signed and sealed. You owe me $100, signed by 2 Edim. So the loiv is allowed to do that. Obviously, the loiv should be careful. He knows that this is a possibility, so he's got to put it in a good safe and make sure that nobody, he doesn't lose it, nobody steals it, etc. However, the Malva can't write out such a shtar, because can you imagine the Malva writes out a shtar that I lent $100 to Shimon, and it's signed and sealed, the soifer wrote it, and the Adam signed it. He never gave out a penny.
How do you know who wrote it? How can the Adam sign it if that never material, meaning?
Because they have these scrupulous people.
If it's the Lover who's asking the Adam.
He could. He has sort of a migu because he could say, "I owe this someone money." So he could have same way he could have the shtar, I would imagine.
That's if the loive is writing the shtar, and therefore the loive can go and say, "Believe me when I tell you that I owe him, or I'm going to owe him $100 because we intend closing on this loan today, tomorrow, blah blah blah." Give me the piece of paper. Here we're talking about the Mishnah that the Malva wants to write out the shtar, and the Malva at the moment hasn't paid anything. For all we know, he has no intention of ever giving them anything. So that's why the Mishnah tells you, "Ain't koisel the Malva, don't do it unless the Loiva is present." And the Loiva says, "Yeah, it's taka true. I borrowed the money. Yes, write out the shtar. Otherwise," and when a soifer hears, "Who are you? Are you the Malva or the Loiva?" "I'm the Malva." "Mister, you want me to write out a shtar? Bring the loiv here into the shtibel, and we'll write out the shtar. We'll get Adam to sign it, but I can't write a few yourself." Who has to pay the charges for the scribes writing it? Obviously the loiv, because it's all his to his benefit that the Malva is writing at the, that the Malva is lending him money. If the Malva wouldn't lend him money, he doesn't need a shtar, and the shtar is worthless. So therefore, he has to go and pay for the scribe. Right, now we're talking about a mechira. The moicher wants to go and sell his property. Apparently there aren't too many customers standing online. So he wants to make sure that if and when he gets a lekeach, the lekeach shouldn't go and say, okay, well, let's wait until we get the scribe and he'll write it all out and we'll negotiate the terms. He wants to have a fair tigishtar, a shtar in hand, so that if the lekeach says, yes, I'm willing to buy it, oh, here's the shtar, I give you the shtar, give me the money, and we're all done. So he can write out such a shtar. Obviously, once again, the moicher has to be very careful to put it in a safe place. However, in for the same reason that we gave before, because the lekeach has a shtar written out that he bought this property for whatever price, and he's going to hold on to that document, then he'll, years from now, he'll be able to say, you see, I bought it. I have a document with your name on it that you sold it to me. So you can't go and write a document unless the moicher is with him. Even though it's to the benefit of both the moicher to sell and the lekeach to buy, because that's why they're engaging in the transaction, but Chazal say that the lekeach has the greater interest in the purchase. Most mochrim are not interested in selling the property, of course, unless it's a lousy property, but under normal circumstances, we're not talking about nowadays when there are a lot of flippers and that's their whole business. People typically, when they bought a property, they kept it for the rest of their lives and they left the birusha for their kids. And they would only go and sell it if there was a desperate situation. So the fact that the lekeach is buying it, the lekeach is overjoyed. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I bought it. So he's nice and schar. Right, the ein koisin story, erisin v'nisuin, el midash neim. Now what means story erisin v'nisuin? Shtar erisin doesn't mean like the first Mishnah in Masechtas Kedushin, that you can go and acquire a young lady, isha niknas, b'sholish drachim, b'kesef, u b'shtar, u b'biyah. The story erisin is what we would call today a tenoim. That the tenoim shtaris that we have today, that they read out at the time of the Kabbalah's panim, are of course a standard form. However, in the good old days, this was a very negotiated document, and it was negotiated between the Avi HaChosen and the Avi HaKala, that the Avi HaChosen said, I'm going to shtel tzu, I'm going to go and give X, Y, and Z, and you're going to go and give A, B, and C. I'm going to pay for part of the chosen, and you're going to pay for this, and I'm going to pay for that, and I'm going to...
They know. And they read it, in public. Everybody knows.
Sorry, no.
Everybody hears.
That they didn't read in public. This was done in a private document. You can, but... Yeah. Anyway, so that type of document then has to be midash neyem, because obviously they're negotiating the terms. We have to know what each one is willing to go and provide. This one will provide the food, and this will provide the shelter, and this one gives the chasen a presence, and this one pays for the shaitel, and this one pays for the shtram, or whatever they write in the shtar. So this has to be done midash neyem. What is nisuan? Rishbam says that's the ksuba that we're all familiar with. There too, you had to have the tenoim, because most nisu and most ksubas that we have today are all standard forms, but in the good old days, they would put in the nechse tzvengbaz or the nechse malug, and how much toysef is ksuba, so it's got to be bedashne. V'achosin noisin schar, since the chosin is the one that is acquiring, right, isha niknes,
he's
lekech, and he has to go and pay for the charges of the sofer. Ein koisin shtar arisus v'kablonis el midashne. Now, we all know what an oris is. An oris is not a person that's getting a salary, but he's getting lemechza leshlish v'revia, what they call in English a sharecropper. So he's going to go and share the crops, literally. So whatever the land produces for the next 6 months, at the end of that, he'll get 50%, 25%, whatever the terms of the shtar arisus is. Kablonis is more of what we are, I think, more accustomed to, and that is paying a rental fee. It's just that kablonis typically is not in money, but in terms of the produce. So if this person, for instance, leased the field to go and produce grain, so at the end of the season, instead of giving him $1,000 for rental fee, he gives him 20 bushels, 50 bushels, whatever they make up. So this type of arrangement is obviously for both of their benefit. And again, this is something which is negotiated, because some places maybe they have lemechza leshlish revia, depending on the negotiation. So they have to, and the kablonis certainly, am I going to give you 50 bushels or 100 bushels? So it has to be midash neim. They both have to be there present and negotiated, and you write out the shtar. V'makabel noisin tzchar. Even though the owner of the field, he obviously has a benefit to have someone either renting his property, leasing his property, or working as a sharecropper, but the greater benefit is the Mekabel who needs the Parnasa. So therefore he's delighted to be able to become the sharecropper or to be able to lease the property, and therefore he has to pay the schar. Ein koisin shtori birurin b'chol ma'aseh bezdin el midashneh. What means shtori birurin? Says Rishbam. We're going to have that tomorrow, the day after. The Gemara is going to have two pshatim in shtori birurin. So therefore Rishbam doesn't commit himself to either pshat at this point. To mention, we'll have a couple of pshatim in the Gemara. Now, what's a ma'aseh bezdin? Ma'aseh bezdin, says Rishbam, is a shtar adrachta. What's a shtar adrachta? Somebody, unfortunately, is not paying his bills, he's not paying his debts, he's foreclosing on it, so he gives such a foreclosure warrant that allows people to try to find properties, and then after that to go and sell it, and the like. So well, these types of shtars, again, it's got to be midashneim, because the person that owes the money wants to make sure we're talking about the right properties, and certainly the person who's owed the money, the malva, wants to make sure that these properties belong to the loiva, they don't belong to somebody else. Both of them have to go and pay, both the shtar birun and the masa bezin, or the Rishbam says, okay, we'll see on the next article. The shneim noisin tzchar. Shem gomnil oimu the shneim koisin, shneim, shneim koisin shneim, le'atzvei u le'zeh li'atzvei. Rishbam says that the Shem Gamliel is not going on the Ma'aseh Bezdin, it's going back on the Shtari Birurin. Shtari Birurin is a type of thing that both parties want a counterpart of the Shtari Birurin. Obviously, they didn't have Xerox copies those days. What's a Xerox? Yeah, they didn't have photocopies those days. And so therefore, they would write out l'chatchila two shtaris, identical, one they gave to one party, one they gave to the other party. So you wrote out two, and each one pays for his shtar.
And what is the transaction in there?
What is the shtari berurin? So Mitchum, that's going to be tomorrow. We're going to explain what the shtari berurin are. There's going to be two pshatim in the Gemara. Okay. Mitchum, don't be nervous. We're going to get to it. Okay, Zukti Mar, we started off the Mishnah that if the sofer is asked either to write a get or to write a shoyver li'isha, guess what? He has to recognize him. Pray tomorrow. She already heard Brother Barry was already expounding as to what the Mishnah means, but now we're going to have it in the Gemara. Amr Yuna Marav, Ubavachi Makir, Shem Ho Ish Beget, Beshem Ho Isha Beshoyver. The sofer has to recognize the name of this individual that's being put in the get. In other words, the person's name is Reuven ben Yaakov, Lamoshel, and he's coming to Sofer and he says, please write out a get for Reuven ben Yaakov. So he has to know for sure that this person's name is Taka Reuven ben Yaakov. Why do I have to name his name is Reuven ben Yaakov? Because maybe this person's real name is Moshe ben Shloimeh. And the reason why he's writing out the get is because he knows that there's an Isha in his vicinity who's Nebuch and Aguna, that her husband refuses to give her get already for the last 5 or 10 years. So you know what he's going to do? He's going to make a drei. He's going to go to a fraud. He's going to go to the sofer and say that he happens to be the Moshe ben Shloimeh, or if his real name was Moshe ben Shloimeh, he's going to say his name is Reuven ben Yaakov, whatever the name is of this recalcitrant Baal that refuses to go and give the get, unfortunately. In today's modern society, this is unfortunately, it's a big, big problem. Anyway, I know a family member already 5 years, she wants to get out of this Gehenna, and the husband refuses, and he must come to Dreidlich and everything. So anyway, so somebody's going to go and impersonate him, say, my name is the name of that individual, and go and have the soifer write out a get, and of course he's going to give the name of the Isha as well, and then after the dust settles, he takes the get, he pays off the fees, and he's going to go to the Isha and say, ah, now you have a get. The get says the name of your husband, it says your name, shee. So therefore, because of this potential fraud, says our Mishnah, the scribe has to be able to recognize the Ish, who he happens to be, that this is his real name. His real name is Reuven ben Yaakov and not Moshe ben Simcha or whatever. And the same thing with Shem Isha B'Shoiver, that when the Shoiver is going to have the name of the lady that is giving the receipt to her husband for the Ksuba, what happens if there's a fellow who doesn't particularly like this lady for whatever reason? So what he's going to do is he will commission, or she will commission, a lady will come to the bed, to the sofer, and say, my name is Sprinzer. Her name really is Genendel, but she'll say her name is Sprinzer, which is the name of Sprinzer Smith, who's about to go and get a get, and she wants to get her ksuba payment. So what are we going to do? So this lady fraudulently says to the sofer that my name is Sprinzer Smith. Then the sofer writes it out, And she will take that shtar shoiver and give it to the husband and say, husband, you hold on to it, because when you give the get, and then Shprinz is going to want to go and get paid, you'll say, I paid you already. Therefore, the shoiver has to recognize the name of this lady. This is her real bona fide name when he writes out the shoiver.
Aren't these signed by witnesses who also have to recognize the transaction as being...
Sure, could, maybe that they also have to be makir.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, you know, if you look at the first Rishbam on the Gemara, very good. She makes she ishmael beget hasuivo edim tzrich v'shakir. Just like you said, shkoyach for adding that. So they have to know exactly the identity of the husband in the case of the shoyver, the identity of the lady. Yosef Rav Safar Vacha Barhuna Vravuna Bar Chinina V'Yosef Abayi Gabayu V'Yasvi V'Kamu Baylo. They were clearing the following shaila: Shemo ish beget in. Shemu Ishaloi, shouldn't the scribe also know the name of the lady? Because what happens if Taka, you have two Reuven ben Yaakovs. So he, but one is married to Shprintz and the other is married to Gnendel. And it's Gnendel who's number for Yaguna, who's having tzaris. So Reuven ben Yaakov, number one, who's married to Shprintz, goes into the scribe and says, you know me, Reuven Yaakov, of course I know you. I'm part-time Gaben of Swedish. I call you up all the time, Reuven Yaakov, sure, no problem. I need a get. Really, have a get? You have a problem with your wife? I can't go into the details. It's not here. Okay, understand. Try for $250 right out of get. What's your wife's name? My wife's name is Shprintzer. Reuven ben Yaakov is divorcing Shprintzer. Blah, 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 blah. And what happens? Turns out that that's not his wife. It's the Gnendel that's having the difficulties in the getting a get. So he's going to go and give this get, which says the not his wife's name, but the other wife's name. And he's going to go and give it to that other wife of the other Reuven ben Yaakov. Another two Reuven ben Yaakovs in town. Moore's going to later talk about Yosef ben Shimon.
Yes.
Anyway, we're going to have that shortly. Anyway, so he writes out a get, and he tells the story for right out to Shprintz. His wife's name is not Shprintz, his wife's real name is Gnendel. But the other Reuven ben Yaakov, the recalcitrant husband who's not given the get, his wife's name is Shprintz. So wouldn't you want that the Soifer know her name as well? And the Gemara says the same thing would apply to the Shoiver. If the lady that comes to the scribe says, my name is Shprintzer, here I can prove it, here's my driver's license, here's my passport, I know you, sure, you're Shprintzer. And she writes out Soifer write out a Shoiver for her husband, so-called Reuven ben Yaakov. Her husband's not Reuven ben Yaakov. Her husband's name is Moshe ben Shloima, or another name. And so therefore, shouldn't the Soifer have to know the name of both the Ish v'Isha, both by the get and by the Shoiver? And therefore, V'yasvi k'maboylu, they're asking, Shema Ish beget in, Shema Ish loy, Shema Ish b'Shoiver in, Shema Ish loy, v'lecha shtil megosav gita, v'ozol mamteli itse deheich. Maybe this Reuven ben Yaakov, who's writing out the get, is commissioning the writing out the get, he's not giving it to his own wife. Hashem, he and his wife are fine. He's going to give it to the wife of the other Reuven ben Yaakov in town. You can have the same thing by the shoiver. A lady by the name of Shprintzer. Yeah, her name is Shprintzer, no question about it. However, her husband's name is Reuven ben Yaakov. Her husband's name is Moshe, or whatever. And she's going to go and give it to that other husband. And then the other husband will now have a shoiver. Not her husband, the husband of that other Shprintzer. And now that husband will have a shoiver receipt that he paid. Why would she do something like that? Either she hates that other lady, or they have a conspiracy, and she's going to share the amount of the ksuba with that man, right? He owes 200, you give me 100, I give you this counterfeit shoiver, etc. So therefore, Amalu Abaye was sitting next to these three Rabbanan, right? We had Rav Safar, Rav Ach Bar Huna, Rav Huna Bar Chinina. They're asking the question, V'yosef Abaye Gabayu. You recall that Abaye was the expert on fraudulent and deceptive practices from the Omer Aleph. Rav said, it's not just Shemo Ish alone. Shemo Ish beget, vu adin li Shemo Isha. Shemo Isha b'shoi, vu adin li Shemo Isha. You're 100% right, you have to know both names, not just the name of the one commissioning the get or the shoiver, but also the other person's name, and that you should know for sure that this is Taka, he's married to her, and therefore where this is totally bona fide and not a fraud. Frank Dimar, v'lech l'sh l'shnei ben yeh. Yosef ben Shimon Adon Be'er Achas. Maybe we're talking about two Yosef ben Shimons who are both married to each one has the same name, Yosef ben Shimon, and it's miraculous. But each one of them is married to Rachel Bas Shprintz, or whether we Rachel Bas Lovan. So each one is married to the same name of the same lady. So what might happen is one of the Yosef ben Shimons knows that the other lady is an aguna, and his other namesake, Yosef ben Shimon, refuses to go and give the get, and his name and her name are exactly the same. What's the likelihood of that happening? Probably a very, very small likelihood.
Actually, allowed Menachem Mendels and Sara Mushkas. Well, no, I mean, so it's not so remote.
Okay.
It's not so remote.
Yeah,
you know?
I gotcha. All right. Anyway, so I guess it's possible. So, where the man's name and the wife's name are the same. And therefore, one of the Yosef and Shimon's goes to the Sofer and Tilma Kosov Gita right out of get the Ozel Umam Tilit Itzadeh. Not his own wife. He and his wife from Bruchshim, fine. He's going to give it to the other Yosef and Shimon's wife, who coincidentally has the same name. Rav is the Baal member in all of these members over here, and Rav says, in such a unique case, Shnei Yosef and Shimon Adon Be'er Achas, with the wives' names being the same, you always have to have both couples, both Yosef and Shimon's and their wife Shprinza, have to both be in front of Bezin, so that there won't be any doubts whatsoever that the right Yosef and Shimon is giving a get to his wife and not to somebody else's wife, and that no Shmai
Drai.
Sorry, Nachmul?
Even if he knows the two of them.
Even if the
husband and wife.
Right.
So the scribe and the Edom know both parties, both
right.
couples.
He needs to know both parties, that's right.
But they don't have to be in presence.
I guess Rav said, well, the good news is, how often does it happen, except in Lubavitch, where you have Menachem Mendel's being married to Mushkas. This doesn't happen every day of the week, right? So if it were to occur, to not to have the slightest doubts and the slightest fraud, whatever, do it all together in one room, so everybody sees clearly it's this Yosef ben Shimon, and it's this Shprinza, and not another Yosef ben Shimon with his wife Shprinza.
I would say better not to get divorced.
Yeah, that's the best, yeah. V'leichesh dol ma'ozel l'mosa achrita u'machzik lei l'shmei b'yosef ben Shimon because of gita u'mamti lei l'itzei d'heich. What's going to happen is, maybe someone, you have, again, a person who's not scrupulous. What's going to happen is, he hears that in the other town, there's someone who's not giving a get to his wife. So what does he do? He goes and impersonates that other person, not that buddy putting on a clothing or anything, but he comes into that town, nobody knows him, and he says he has the name of that other individual. And you don't have to worry about two Yosef ben Shimon's, because we just said that if you have two Yosef ben Shimon's, v'yirachas, ein megarshin shnei Yosef b'fnei zeh. So therefore, in the town registry, they only have one Yosef ben Shimon. This person's real name is Moshe, Reuven, whatever. And he comes in and says, I'm Yosef ben Shimon. Oh, okay, I know there's only one, so I didn't know you're the one. Well, fine, Yosef ben Shimon. And I'm giving a get to my wife, Shprinza. Anyways, v'leichesh dol ma'ozel l'masachrit. He's going to go to another town where he doesn't live. And u'machzik lei l'shmei, be Yosef ben Shimon. He's going to tell everybody on day one, my name is Yosef ben Shimon. And then he's going to stay there for a week or two. Oh, who's that newcomer to the shul? And he asks the Gabbai, he knows. Oh, Yosef ben Shimon, I gave him shlishi during the week on the Shabbos. We gave him after new person. Oh, Shem Aleichem, Yosef ben Shimon.
Can you come tomorrow? We need a minyan.
Okay.
Very good.
Well, because of Gita, and unfortunately, after 2 or 3 weeks, he goes over to the Sofer and says, you know, you don't really know me that well, but you know, I'm Yosef Jofka. I know Yosef ben Shimon. I've been to shul every day, and everybody calls me Yosef ben Shimon. You know, because of Gita, and he's going to go and give it to a local wife of a Yosef ben Shimon. Obviously, the other Yosef ben Shimon davens in another shul somewhere, so nobody knows that this is a second Yosef ben Shimon. If he would live together in the same town, the Shnei Yosef ben Shimon, then ein megarsh shel zeh b'fnei zeh. But the Soif is under the impression that there's only one Yosef ben Shimon. He went through the whole registry, there's only one. This guy says his name is Yosef ben Shimon, but he really isn't, and he's just visiting the town for a couple of weeks. So, Ibazoi, aren't you leaving yourself open to the possibility that even if identifies the name Yosef ben Shimon, and the Soifer says, yeah, I know your name Yosef ben Shimon, you've been here a couple of weeks, sure, and I met your wife, her name is Sprint, so yeah, everything is fine. So, Ibazoi, wouldn't we have a problem even if you say the Soifer has to be makir both of them? If he's already been here for more than 30 days and he says his name Yosef ben Shimon, you don't have to worry. Why don't you have to worry? Because within 30 days, you would think that if his real name is not Yosef ben Shimon, somebody would know that he is a Ramai, someone would know that he is trying to make here a fraud. In other words, if he only comes in 1 or 2 days, not everybody met him, not everybody sees him. Once he's here for 30 days, he's been there for 4 Shabbosim, Yazim Shem, yeah, not Yazim Shem. Come on, yeah, Yazim Shem, yeah, Mishig. I know you already. Don't you remember we were kids together in the same class? We learned together in Cheder. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. No, I changed my name. Baloney. Anyway, so if it's more than 30 days, ain't Choshenlay. It's Frank Timura. But what happens if Lo Yischazik Mai? What happens if he's there only for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and therefore we don't have this ain't Choshenlay that somebody would certainly recognize him, and he would be terrified to go and make this name change. And he says, he's Yosef ben Shimon, and everybody says, oh, Yosef ben Shimon, he looks like Yosef ben Shimon, he acts like Yosef ben Shimon. So what do you do then? If he comes to the soif, I want to write out a get for my wife. Amar Baya, what you do is the Korileva Ani. Whilst he's walking down the street, you scream out, hey, Yosef ben Shimon. And you see if he turns around. If he turns around, that means his real name is Yosef ben Shimon. If his real name is Reuben Yaakov, he's not going to turn around until you say 3 or 4 times, oh, yo, yo, that's my name, Yosef. I forgot my name, Yosef ben Shimon. Yeah, yeah, that's me, it's Yosef ben Shimon. Yeah. So therefore you go and call him and see what his reaction is. Rav Zvid says that doesn't work. Rav Zvid Omer Ramo'a Bremeusei Zohir. When you have a rami like this, who is engaging in fraud and deception, he's going to review it. You know, last week we started saying we're seeing Talamut L'Rucha. So the Ramah says, if you say, sorry?
You say it 90 times.
90 times. You have to say it 101 times. But the Ramah says it's 90 times. Why? Because then you get a regilis after saying it 3 times a day. 3 times. 3 times 30 is 90. And after that, you don't have to worry about that maybe you say a suffix, maybe you say bracha. So this person also presumably said, Yosef ben Shimon, my name is Yosef ben Shimon, my name is Yosef ben Shimon. He did it 90 times until it was ingrained in him that he knew for sure that it's stuck, his name is Yosef ben Shimon. So if he's walked down the street, hey, Yosef ben Shimon, he'll turn around immediately. Yeah, you're calling me. Sure, sure, sure. So therefore says Rav Zvid, that is not reliable. So what do you have to do according to Rav Zvid? So if you look, you see the Rishbam over here. Ein choshen, she have ein choshen. Ein choshen loy. It's about 3/4 down the Rishbam. Ein choshen loy to kol kach loy hayamachlef shmoi zman meruba. After 30 days, he'd be noivis to go around with Yosef ben Shimon. Then yivod adavar, because the word will get out that he's a fraud. He's not a real Yosef ben Shimon. They had this about a year ago, 2 years ago. They found a person who looked like a Chassidish Shehid.
He was a Muslim.
Yeah, he was a missionary. Yes. And then when they discovered he was a missionary, he moved to another town somewhere else. Anyway, and he said that he's a Moil Metasoifer. Wow, that's wonderful. He did a bunch of brisim, and he went and he fixed the fritoyer. It was terrible. They found out he was a missionary. Anyway, these things can happen. So, Zokimor says, Yoda Vizor Lanois. He'll be very careful. He scream out Yosef ben Shimon, and he'll answer. Hilkach ein takana ad l'schazik. The only way that you can allow for a soifer to go and allow a newcomer to commission the writing of a get, he has to be there at least 30 days. Once he's uchzak, then ein choshen loy, like Rishbam said, because he'd be noivis that he has a cheses kashus, and he'd be very noivis, but within 30 days, somebody will recognize him from the alte shtetl, from the alte haim, and it's a tzan tzuris. So what's a tzan, right? I told you the story already a number of years ago, that here at what's called today Rabbi Besser Shtibel, years ago, it used to be the Hotaz Shtibel. Hotaz means the roof was Rabbi Leibowitz. He was the one that started the shul. After he moved to Brooklyn because he was Oyleg Dula from Hotaz, he became the Vina Ruv. Then they had Rav Bernfeld. I believe he passed away. Rav Bernfeld of Rucha, he was the Ruv of the Shtibel for a number of years. After that, when he moved away, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and then Rav Chaskel Besser Zichron Livracha took over. Anyway, the story was that there was a fellow there in shul who was a Levi, who was making a bar mitzvah, and everybody, oh, bar mitzvah, big simcha, blah, blah, blah. And his brother of the Baal Simcha comes all the way from South America to share the simcha, Bali. Anyway, what happened was that the boy is laning, and he gets to Levi, and the Gabbai goes over to the brother, the Baal Simcha, and he says, oh, no, ya'amoid. And he says, why are you calling me up? I'm not a Levi. What do you mean you're not a Levi? Your brother, the Baal Simcha. Has Ochnish Kalevi. He's not a Levi either. What are you talking about? He's been davening here for the last 3 years and he's a Levi, Levi, Levi. Anyway, what happened was that they asked the Baal Simcha, and the Baal Simcha now turned red and green in the face and said, truth of the matter, he's Yisrael. So why did he say that he's a Levi? He says in the Haim where he lived before the war, he lived in a kleine shtetl, and he said that in that shtetl there was a Levi who was not the highest caliber in terms of his tzidkus and all the rest. And Nishazak Reis Tamar Chochem, Nishazak Reis Yerushamayim. He was one of the guys in the back bench in the shul, and he got aliyahs regularly because there weren't too many aliyahs around. He says that I got aliyah once a year in Simchas Torah. Otherwise, the Gabbai never even looked at me. I felt bad. I felt the war is over, Nebuchadnezzar, the whole town was destroyed. Who's going to know the difference? So I came to America, we were born alive. And this way, Baruch Hashem. That's a good question. So what we call Akasha from Mas. They're more Kaharim than there are Levim. Anyway, so bottom line is, he got aliyahs constantly, and he got up, and he had to go and admit that Nebuchadnezzar was not.
He was a fraud.
He was not a lady, he was a Yisrael. So you see that it could be even after 30 days, it could be Vizchazi. But we're talking about not the name, we're just talking about the status of the lady.
Yeah, anyway. Also, we had a guy from South America who said he was a
Kohen. That was Kohen, yeah, that's a separate story. Yeah,
that
was
a Kohen.
Yeah. Anyway,
Mr. Brill.
The question was even was it was a Yid or not.
Right.
Wait, that's a different story. So my father's Zichron Levracha was very mishabech. Rabbi Berenfeld felt bad for that Yid because Nebuchadnezzar, he had, you know, grease all over his face or whatever the proper expression.
Of his son, it's
exactly. So he said to the Gabbai, for the next year, give this Yid aliyahs only which are multi-purpose. Give him an aliyah that both a Levi can get and a Yisrael can get. Such as, if there's no Kohen, go and give him, you can give him a Bim Kohen. Go and give him an Achrein. Go and give him a Maftir. So that people, because next week you're going to go and give him Shlishi, then people stick. I remember last week you had Levi and now we got Shlishi. So therefore, go and give him
something. The shame from him.
Exactly.
It's the brother's fault. He should have kept his mouth.
Yeah. He had to get up for a Levi. He'd have to get for the Aliyah. Anyway, so the bottom line is that so over the period of a year, it'll stop. You know, people won't think about it anymore. And then after a year, then you start giving him Aliyah as a Yisrael. And my brother's Zangizant had a Masa. My brother is a lawyer, and he had a lot of clients in South America. And so one of his clients invited him to come. He's making a bar mitzvah for his son in South America, with Chile or wherever, or
Argentina,
Brazil, whatever, one of those places. Yeah. Anyway, so bottom line is my brother got there. He came for Shabbos because he was a client to my brother. And then my brother heard that where the person davens is not... Not the same type of shul like our shtibel over here. Apparently, it wasn't such a mechitza, wasn't so kosher.
It wasn't reliable.
Yeah, my brother didn't want to go into the details. He said he felt uncomfortable davening there. So he davened first somewhere else. He davened in a hotel room. And then after that, he said, I'm going to come in late. So he comes in the middle of laning. Comes in the middle of laning. The Baal Simcha goes, Daniel, Mr. Danny Shalom, I can come to Rain. He tells the guy, make sure he gets an aliyah. Anyway, so he comes to Ravi or Chamishi. And my brother knew that the Baal Simcha was either a Kohen or a Levi, and so therefore he figured he's there and the boy is there and the brothers are there. So when the Gabbai tried to call him up for an Aliyah, he didn't want an Aliyah because of the status of the shul. And so he said, well, I'm a Levi. And therefore, you know, you can't give me an Aliyah. Certainly, I'm Ravi or Chamishi now. It's already too late for the first Levi. And at the end, the Baal Simcha will get, so he's off the hook. Anyway, what happened was, two Aliyahs later, the Gabbai comes over to him. Nu, Yamoid. I told you I'm a Levi. He says, yeah, but we're learning two parshas this week for Yaakov Pekude, and our minig is, as soon as he comes to start the second parsha, we'll start again from Kohen Levi again. So that's why I want to kill him.
You got to do it.
I don't know whatever happened after that basically, but that was it's a true story.
I got tripped up with
Maftir
also.
Yeah, the Maftir, the bar mitzvah boy is going to have. You don't have to worry about that. Achmed was a brother, was a cousin, whatever. Anyway, so getting back to argument. So this person's going to be there. So it's over 30 days in Choshen. If it's less than 30 days, we have a machloikis where Abaye says, just call out his name randomly. And Rav Zidda says, that's not work. You have to wait until he's taka muchzik. So what that means over 30 days. So Yemora tells us now a story. There was a shoiver, such a receipt, and this lady comes with a shoiver in hand. Omrelei lav anohavi. This is not me. I didn't get paid on my ksuva. The whole thing is a fraud. Omar, so now Rabbi Yirmi Abba said, Omar anonami amrilahu lav ihi. In fact, when people asked me, I said, that's not that lady. I know the lady and that's not her, and therefore what's going on is a fraud. The Omreli and the other Dayanim or the other Adim said, Mekish hu de kashullah ubagar law kalam. this is the same lady from years ago, and it's mamish the same lady. You don't recognize her because she's gotten old, and even her voice is deeper than it was amul, because after all, after a period of time, you get older and you're up. So he said initially that this cannot be the lady, and therefore
it's a fake.
The whole thing is a phony, this piece of paper, the shomer. But afterwards, his friends convinced him, no, it is the same lady. So what do you do now? Omer Rabbi, Afkavdi Omer Rabban, even though we have the general rule, since he was so convinced initially that this is not the same lady that it was, blah, 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 and now the others try to go and change his mind, it's too late. He already gave his own testimony, so to speak, where he said, this is not the lady, you can't change your mind. However, Tumer Rabbanon, if you're talking about that the person is a Tumer Rabbanon, such as presumably Tisribiyamir Bar Abba, in such a case, Lav Urcha Lemedik. You can't really have tainus on him if he didn't notice initially, because after all, the Tumer Rabbanon is going to act with Derech Tznius, he's not going to look at her directly, he's not going to listen to her voice so carefully. So then, in this case, this would be an exclusion, this would be an exception to the rule that Kimin Shehigit, yes, Choyzer Umagit. Now the Gemara tells us another story just like it. It's not me. It's a different lady. I know you. I recognize you. It is you after all. So even though we said a moment ago that you can't blame a Talmud Chacham if he doesn't know for sure, even the doctor, but if he tells you, I recognize her, I know what I'm talking about, you can rely on him. If he says something, it turns out that he was mistaken, that could be. However, if he says he was stuck, you can rely on him. We finished to the two dots. If he wants to go and marry a lady, and they're now doing erisin, nedaber im amoritz badeh, he should bring an amoritz together with him for the kesef kedushin, for the erisin. Why? Because from now until the nisuin, could be a year later, during that period of time, he's going to do a love and mas, he's going to switch Leah for Rochel, or Rochel for Leah, or something like that. So therefore, the best thing is, bring mitan amoritz, who's going to be very careful to it. It's true, the gemara says in the kesef kedushin, a person is not allowed to be kaddish as isha at shirena, but shirena doesn't mean that he has to focus with a gun, you know, gazing on every single little detail. So he might just tak a seer, but now a year later he might not recognize her anymore. So take amulets along to be sure that this is the same lady. We're talking about a person that is not so careful about, you know,
not looking at women's features.
Shmira Seinayim, who's a little bit more casual in this and talks to ladies all the time. She's pretty and she's not so pretty, etc., etc. So that's the way we'll know for sure that this is the right thing.